This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com. Lord Almighty, I feel my temperature
rising. 36 minutes after 4 o'clock in Central Virginia. It's about 83 degrees. It's a beautiful summer day, and I hope you're doing well. My name's Coy Barefoot. It's Monday. Thanks for joining me. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. Bob Holdsworth is the founder and president at VirginiaTomorrow.com. He joins us on Monday afternoons to talk a little Virginia politics. Bob, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Coy. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the weather. Finally, we have some nice sunshine, and it's not raining, so there's cause for celebration.
Same here. I mean, it's been really nice to get some nice summer weather, finally.
So let's talk about your, of course, VirginiaTomorrow.com, the must-read website for folks who want to track Virginia politics, the ins and outs. All the stories are there first, usually before they hit the headlines. Bob Holdsworth, of course, very well plugged in with all the campaigns going on right now. Let's talk about the latest news on Bob McDonnell, the Republican candidate for governor, not going to take a pledge of some kind. What's this all about?
Well, what an unusual week we had last week, Coy. Bob McDonnell went to meet with the editorial page of the Washington Times, a conservative editorial page, and one normally would have thought that this would have gone very, very smoothly. It turns out that it didn't apparently didn't. That they asked McDonnell if he was going to take a pledge not to raise taxes, and he simply said something to the effect that, a million pledges come candidates' way these days, and he's just decided that he's not going to be signing any pledges. And what happened that makes the whole event pretty remarkable is that it seems that after he left the meeting with the editorial page, they sent a videographer out after McDonnell to get him on camera before he left the building. And they posted in the editorial a video of McDonnell talking about his position on taxes and this pledge. And really just kind of sent a roasting his way, suggesting it was, Democrats who typically said they had no plans to raise taxes, but refused to take the pledge. And clearly what McDonnell was doing was, once again, appealing to kind of the middle and particularly part of the business community in Virginia that thinks there needs to be some kind of revenue increase in order to fund transportation. And what you find here, Coy, is the difficulty of, you might say, negotiating the internal issues that are current with Republican-leaning voters and perhaps interest groups in Virginia. Because on one hand, you have people really wanting him to be adamant about taxes. Then on the other hand, you have a group of business leaders telling him to resist this kind of simplistic pledge. Even beyond that, there's a question of whether McDonnell was fully prepared for what might happen at this interview. So what a remarkable beginning of the campaign to have McDonnell, who really looked to be in very good shape, all of a sudden attacked by the Washington Times editorial page.
Amazing. The Republican nominee for governor in Virginia attacked by the Washington Times, of all papers.
Yeah, and beyond that, Coy, a guy who, overall, instincts are very clearly conservative. I think he obviously believes that to win in Virginia, you need to win the middle as well. And I think there's legitimate argument about how you go about doing that. And the Washington Times could certainly have a legitimate argument about what they think is the way to do it and what's the proper Reagan-esque way, you might say, to win the middle.
Right.
But I don't think anyone can really believe that Bob McDonnell's a closet liberal or someone who's hiding his true stripes. He has a record of pretty strong support for conservative causes, and it was pretty unusual to me, the kind of scathing, snarky, you might even say, editorial that was written about him by the Times.
We're talking with Bob Holdsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com, must reading for regular listeners of this program. Anybody interested in Virginia politics, that is the website to go to. And Bob, you really underscore something that, folks who are interested in Virginia politics know and appreciate, but casual observers may not realize that, you know, a Republican nominee for high office in Virginia really walks a fine line, because you have to satisfy the ideologues of the right, the far right wing, anti-tax, anti-government conservatives, the folks often motivated by these social causes, and also the pro-business community, which often tend to be more middle-of-the-road liberal conservatives, you know, more moderate conservatives. And there's that tension between these, often the pro-market and pro-business, which is not the same thing oftentimes. You can be pro-market, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're pro-business.
No, exactly. And if you add independent voters into this mix, you see what the challenge ultimately becomes for Bob McDonald here. That it was one thing when Republican Party identification in the state clearly exceeded Democratic identification, and one could run simply on the grounds that you were a Republican conservative, and you really didn't have to worry too much about what that might mean in terms of the percentage breakdown of the vote. But now you do. Most of the public opinion polls show that in terms of registered voters, I'm not sure these were the people who will actually turn out in November, but in terms of registered voters, the Democrats have a party identification advantage of 5 to 10%, or 5 to 8% in Virginia, in most of the surveys that I've seen over the last year. Well, this makes it a far more difficult path for a Republican candidate. They have to do extremely well among independents if they're going to find a way to overcome their party ID disadvantage that they now have in Virginia, as we've become a purple state, and even one that at times, at least in federal elections, has a bluish tint to it.
Yeah, which means the conservatives need to let their nominees for statewide office run to the middle and not see it as, you know, they're being turncoats.
Yeah, I think the legitimate argument here is, what does it mean to run to the middle? Do you run to the middle simply by refusing to take pledges, or do you run to the middle or try to obtain votes in the middle, like Ronald Reagan did 30 years ago through ideas like a big tax cut, or Jim Gilmore did through a no car tax pledge, or do you run to the middle by articulating a conservative idea that might have crossover appeal? And I think there's some legitimate area of discussion and debate there about how one does that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't seem to me to be all that productive to be questioning the conservative bona fides or credentials of Bob McDonald, who's been a guy who's been very instrumental in welfare reform, juvenile justice reform, who has been had strong support from the Family Foundation in the past. This is a person whose basic instincts are, you know, are pragmatic but also conservative, and it's a little peculiar to me that those basic orientation is being questioned and not just a tactical judgment.
We're talking with Bob Holdsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com, and of course we will be looking for the McDonald campaign to come out with those Reagan-esque big ideas to attract the independent voters, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge that he has, that they responded to the Times by saying that they were really trying to follow the model of Ronald Reagan. But the model of Ronald Reagan is not just somebody who had crossover appeal. He had crossover appeal because of a particular reason, and they were, I think, three reasons, essentially. One, that he articulated support for a major tax cut. He secondly talked about regaining respect for America around the world at a time when Americans were dozens of Americans were hostages in Tehran. And beyond that, he articulated, at least at the time, what was a growing discontent with what was seen as liberal permissiveness on some social issues. So regardless of whether you agreed with Reagan or not, one couldn't say that he didn't articulate very strong conservative stance. And so that's McDonald's challenge, is to find the conservative stance, you might say, that has this kind of crossover appeal today. And at least to this point in the campaign, I'm not sure there's a single idea that's out there to that regard. There's a basket of notions he's put forward, such as charter schools and drilling off the coast of Virginia, but there's not that one defining idea of the campaign that's emerged to this moment.
We're talking with Bob Holdsworth. He joins us on Monday afternoons at 4:30 to talk a little Virginia politics. You can check him out online at virginiatomorrow.com. Let us turn our attention now to the other side of the aisle. The current governor of Virginia is under attack by the Republican Party of Virginia for traveling. You called him the traveling man. What's going on with that?
Yeah, you might remember that old Ricky Nelson song.
Sure, yeah.
Traveling man with a friend in every port. Well, Tim Kaine's been doing some traveling for the DNC, and the Republicans are objecting to this. A couple of observations about that. On one hand, I think what they're objecting to is that these travels haven't been completely transparent in terms of the notice given to the media beforehand, that in fact the Washington Post has objected, not on the political grounds, but on transparency grounds, to not knowing where the governor was traveling all the time. And that seems to me to be a legitimate concern, and one that the governor's office and the DNC should address on that front. Secondly, I think there's a political issue here. Kaine's approval ratings are relatively high right now. They may not quite be quite as high as Mark Warner's were in 2005. And the Republicans realize that if they remain that high come election day, that's a problem for them. They watched in 2005 the Kaine campaign, at least in part, appeal to the voters on the grounds that he was essentially Mark Warner's younger brother. And there's some evidence already that Deeds is campaigning on the grounds that he's first cousin to both Warner and Kaine, and trying to suggest that McDonnell and Republicans have in some manner been obstructionists to the Kaine-Warner model of governance, which Deeds will continue. So if they don't have a particular policy matter in which they really want to bash the current governor, I think they're trying to suggest that he's doing a part-time job and that Bob McDonnell will be a full-time governor for Virginia. So I think they have a legitimate concern about the transparency issue, about these travels taking place by the sitting governor of Virginia that the public's not been given prior notification of. And then secondly, they have a political interest in trying to find some way of damaging Kaine a little bit prior to the time that Deeds runs as the first cousin of Warner Kaine.
Bob Holdsworth is my guest. If you got a question, 977-1070. I know he would love to hear from you. You have a question about any of the stories in Virginia politics, give us a call. We talk Virginia politics every Monday afternoon. Always look forward to it. Bob, what's this latest on the third grade SOLs in Virginia?
Well, this was a very fascinating little episode to me, and actually a heartening one, that essentially, the school superintendents around the state have been very concerned about the burden of testing that they're under, and they have a right to do so, that it's been fairly extensive. And in particular, they've been concerned about the federal tests that were added on to the state tests. So in trying to find some way to relieve that burden, they said maybe we could eliminate a state test in the third grade for which there's no federal requirement, and that would be the history SOL. And what happened is that there was this bipartisan uprising here. Kirk Cox, a very important member of the House Republican Caucus, he objected. Native American spokespersons objected. Members of the Legislative Black Caucus objected. The chief administrator of Colonial Williamsburg testified against this. it might only be in Virginia that people get excited about removing a test.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was something heartening to that Virginians from all across the political spectrum believe that knowing history is important to understanding our personal, cultural, and social identity. And in this day and age where sometimes only science and technology seem important, it was pretty fascinating and pretty heartening to see all these folks stand up in favor of history. You don't get that too often, and I think Virginians should be proud of what occurred there.
Yeah, I was really moved as well by what happened, and I think this is a good thing. I mean, I like that the state says to our third graders, you need to know this history. And we're going to test you on it. And we're going to, you know, in a sense, test your teachers on it as well, that they're teaching this to you. Because, I mean, let's face it, as the old quote, the old saying goes, you know, once upon a time, all of America was Virginia.
Right. And, you know, there's all that old saying, how do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been? And again, it's so easy in this culture that we have where immediate gratification is often the, you know, the word of the day, to see so many people so vehemently and vigorously stand up on behalf of history and the importance of the discipline. So I'm not sure that would occur in every other state, Coy. You know, I grew up in New Jersey. I don't expect that you would see a overwhelming, you know, consensus on behalf of teaching New Jersey history.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, my sense was that this was very, very positive, and I was really, you know, I think you had to be proud to live in Virginia when you saw that.
Absolutely. We're talking with Bob Holdsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Now, what's the latest on the Virginia Public Access Project, which we've talked about on this program many times? It's VPAP.org. And again, another reason we are so lucky to live in Virginia, to have VPAP, which most states don't have anything like this.
And this is a great little organization that, by and large, focuses on providing information about campaign finance donations. And it has taken the place of a lot of great work that used to be done in the media and put it in one place and organized it. It's done by a former reporter, David Poole, who has a couple of staff members, but it's really both his brainchild and his passion. And if you want to talk about one person making a difference and really contributing to the information level about politics that's accessible now in Virginia, one has to give the Public Access Project and David Poole extraordinary amount of credit. The website's VPAP.org. You can look up any donor at any time to any state campaign in Virginia. And now what they've started to do is they've started to run an Elections Institute office where they're providing more information about elections and election history, and this is a great resource for any citizen and any student that they've put together. And again, this has been just a remarkable organization, and shows you that one person who's dedicated and with passion can really make an impact on Virginia.
Absolutely. I mean, one day in the future, something's got to be named after David Poole. I mean, what an amazing guy to put something like this together that has had a tremendous impact.
Yeah, you know, Coy, I would just say that, you know, when this started about 15 years ago, David was writing for the Virginian Pilot, and the Virginian Pilot on one hand and VCU and the Center for Public Policy I was directing on the other, both did this in a kind of competitive way, and it was we did our best, but at the time there wasn't any electronic disclosure. It was all going down to the State Board of Ed. And then afterwards, what we did in the next election cycle in 97 was that we combined forces, and David came over and worked in the Center for Public Policy, and he spun VPAP off after the 97 effort. And I can tell you, it was one of the prouder things that I've ever been involved in. And while it was a collaboration at the time, the lead person was David Poole, and his energy and his enthusiasm for it. And he's really made a great contribution to Virginia.
And I would just tell the listener that if you've never been to VPAP and checked it out, today is the day. You've got to go there. It's VPAP, V-P-A-P, for Virginia Public Access Project. org. You could spend hours on that website, and all you need to know is it shows you where the money's coming from and when in politics. It just is an amazing, amazing site. Speaking of money, Bob, what's the latest on the state budget? And of course, what are we going to do about transportation? We just had a caller off air talking about, you know, traffic at this time of day in the Charlottesville area over on Pantops. You know, it's just never ending, and there are, you know, we've got projects on the books that we could do to help this problem. You know, new roads that could be built that we've been working on for years, but no money to build them.
Coy, the budget, again, you know, didn't get much attention because it was deja vu all over again. But the deja vu was that collections, once again, were underneath projections, and that there's a new shortfall of an extra $75 million that will total then $300 million. For this fiscal year, I think everybody's hoping the economy turns around in the next fiscal year. No one's that optimistic about how quick it will be. And then beyond that, you have the worry about what happens to state and local budgets when stimulus money goes away in 2 years. So this is an ongoing issue, and as you said, people who are looking for more infrastructure spending, other than that, is that is directly coming from the stimulus dollars, really don't know where it's going to come from, and it's going to be fascinating to see how the candidates approach this issue very quickly because of the fact that, on one hand, it's an absolutely critical issue, but secondly, people like hope and optimism in campaigns, and if all you're talking about is eating your peas and how we're going to be biting the bullet, that may be a responsible thing to do, but it may not necessarily be the most politically advisable thing to do.
We're talking with Bob Holdsworth. Frank is online, too. Frank, you're on with Bob. You go right ahead.
Thank you. Enjoy this every week. A question. I've seen a lot of political campaigns, state campaigns and such, but it seems that every time somehow we get off the main issues and people start talking about issues that don't really have as much importance as say, finance and transportation, which you lock together and all that type of thing. But how can we as citizens keep that from happening? And I don't know if you agree with me or not, but it seems like that happens about every time. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
What a fantastic question. How can we keep them honest?
It's a great question. I don't know how to stop it from happening. You know, the dilemma is that once people articulate their positions on transportation and finance, they have their positions out there. They're covered once or twice, but they're not necessarily always the source of daily conflict. Campaigns are built in many ways on contrast and conflict. So if there's a very clear conflict between the two candidates' positions on this matter, then it's an essential part of the campaign. But if the campaigns largely kind of agree, or given what they've done on transportation, in most of the last two gubernatorial campaigns, they've punted. They basically have not taken a very clear position on how these needs are going to be funded. And once they punt, it's hard to keep that as a headline every day. Candidates punt on transportation. You can only run it once or twice. You can't run it 120 times.
Yeah, yeah. It is difficult, though, when so many people, especially here in Central Virginia, and let's be frank with Frank, you know, it's all over the state that we just have a tremendous infrastructure problem that is only getting worse day by day.
Right, and it's going to places, Coy, that we hadn't been before. As you mentioned, the tremendous growth around that essentially centered around the University of Virginia. Largely because so many people either want to work at or live near a world-class institution. And what you now have is that you have some pretty significant rush hours, some pretty significant traffic problems that wouldn't have been seen 20 years ago. And, you know, if you go down to the Hampton Roads area now, and in some instances it's as bad, if not worse, as Northern Virginia.
Absolutely.
So it's a very serious problem that's having a tremendous impact on the quality of life, but we've yet to find a way to get the solutions to it, as the caller, Frank, said, front and center in the political campaigns, and that's a problem for us.
Bob Holdsworth at VirginiaTomorrow.com. He joins us every Monday afternoon. Bob, thank you so much. Always look forward to it.
Great to be here again, Coy. Thanks so much. Take care.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.